Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C.
As far as what I expect for as an agenda for the next 12 months, I don't have any. Because the last couple of years, whether it's silencing the guns, whether it's the AFCFTA, none of these things have been achieved. So I don't see what would be different this time.
The African Union Summit is underway in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa, Saturday.
If you have a vote where 98% of the population vote for one candidate, that is a red flag. Nobody is that popular in this world.
It will be a busy year for elections in Africa, with nearly 20 countries slated to hold presidential or general elections.
I'm not surprised because right from the start I knew it was all malicious. The prosecution had no evidence whatsoever, and I knew that the prosecution itself was a malicious one.
And prosecutors drop charges against main opposition leader in Seychelles. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The African Union Summit is underway in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa, Saturday. The theme for the two-day meeting is Education and Skill Africa for the 21st Century, Building Resilient Education Systems for Increased Access to Inclusive, Lifelong Quality and Relevant Learning in Africa. The summit provides an opportunity for African leaders to focus discussions on finding solutions to the continent's progress and challenges. Observers say issues confronting the continent include rising insecurity, political tensions, and a recent coup. They also say the African Union's zero policy towards the forceful overthrow of a legitimately elected government appears to be ineffective due to the spate of coups in West Africa. For analysis and expectations of the ongoing conference, I read Christopher Ogumdede. He is a consultant and foreign affairs analyst who specializes in West African politics, security, and foreign relations.
I don't have any expectations. That's the honest truth. The AU summit is something, at this point, it's a dog and pony show. They come together every year. They make some grandiose statements. They have a theme like you just talked about. You take pictures, all these things. But, come back in 12 months' time, very little has been achieved. And, the same thing keeps happening every year. And, I wrote a piece about this some years ago, talking about how these things are structural because the AU is not designed to be functional. So as far as what I expect for as an agenda for the next 12 months, I don't have any because the last couple of years, whether it's, silencing the guns, whether it's the AFCFTA, none of these things have been achieved. So I don't see what would be different this time.
The continent is faced with a lot of challenges, including the ongoing tensions between Rwanda and the DRC, the M23 rebels, causing a lot of trouble in the eastern part of the country, including recent Saki. And then you also are faced in West Africa with insecurity concerns in the Sahel. And then when you go to the Horn of Africa, you also have tension so easing somewhat between Somaliland, Somalia, Ethiopia, and all that. You don't think they will come up with any solutions?
No, I don't. Because they haven't done so over the last 12 months. So I don't see what they are going to come up with in 2 days that will materially change conditions in these places. In many ways, these are flashpoints that you mentioned, whether in the Horn of Africa, whether in West Africa, they are localized conflicts, or at best they are regional. So I think to the extent that AU officials have any real knowledge about these contexts and what to do about them, they will need to lean on the RECs, the regional economic blocs, ECOWAS, EAC, SADC. And so far, not so good. You look at Sudan, IGAD and the EAC have been able to do next to nothing to, tamper down tensions, to reduce the killings and all of these things. Intervention by the United Nations, by Saudi Arabia, by the U.S. hasn't made much of a difference either. And these are entities with, frankly, more influence on the ground in these places than the AU does. So I don't see what the AU will bring to the table that's going to be different or better.
What do you say to some officials in the African Union Commission who say that sometimes political observers on the continent are too cynical and sometimes overly pessimistic, despite efforts by the African Union to encourage and promote democracy on the continent and trying to silence the gun, so to speak? Your response to that?
Yeah, I mean, it's partly correct, I would say, you know, especially as someone who over my career has dealt with, you know, AU officials and has worked closely with the AU. In fact, there have been times I've been, you know, somewhat defensive of the AU and it's, you know, what it's designed to do and its shortcoming. But, you know, the AU at the same time has adopted this mantle of, oh, we're going to be Africa's voice in the international community on the global stage. These are the things, you know, you read the Agenda 2063 and these ambitious, you know, audacious plans that they've set for themselves in terms of regional integration, da 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 da. So it's only right and fair for people to hold you to the standards you set for yourself. And I think it's not unfair to think of what the AU has done thus far in terms of peace and security on the continent, you know, its peer review mechanisms and all of these things, and analyze them, look at the results. If they are good, they are good. If they are not good, they are not good. And so far, so good. The not good column is much more plentiful than the good column. So I don't think it's too cynical or pessimistic to say so, you know. Now, of course, does it mean that the AU isn't doing what it should do? Does it mean that the EU is entirely useless? Does it mean that there is nowhere to go but down? Not necessarily, but I don't think it's people are being unreasonable for pointing out the EU's flaws. No.
Do you have any hopes at all after the summit ends on Sunday? Do you have any hopes of them coming up with efforts to resolve some of the challenges that?
Somewhat, you know, I think that it will be different. It's a case-by-case thing. You know, I look at Ethiopia, for instance, where, you know, the AU's involvement in the Tigray conflict initially, in my view, was terrible. But, you know, over the course of time, the AU's quiet diplomacy, as they like to refer to it, you know, is what sort of led to the breakthrough of this cessation of hostilities agreement between the Tigrayan forces and the Ethiopian federal government. So I think that sort of quiet diplomacy that AU likes to do can be effective and, you know, efficient. You know, I would think, for instance, in the situation with Congo and Rwanda, where, you know, President Lourenco in Angola has been the sort of mediator between the two sides and on behalf of the AU. I think that kind of approach can work, but then it goes back to what I said, that these things are, frankly speaking, regional conflicts that people in Addis Ababa don't always have the knowledge, the skill sets, you know, the contextual ability to, one, know who the real players are, know how to talk to both sides. They don't always have that. You know, they might have the institutional backing, they might have the sort of credibility with the international community like the EU, the UN, and all, but they don't necessarily know who the players are. And too often, you know, the AU sides with governments. That, frankly, is the truth about the AU. That, you know, it's kind of baked into the process, really. The AU is a collection of governments, so they almost always side with governments in local conflict. That doesn't necessarily bode well for breaking peace. So if the AU is to be effective, it simply has to empower and work with the RECs. But then there are also, as I say, structural obstacles to doing so. So it's down to the AU to figure out how to leverage the kinds of relationships it needs to be a much more efficient player.
Christopher Ogumodede is a consultant and foreign affairs analyst who specializes in West African politics, security and foreign relations. He spoke with me from the Senegalese capital, Dakar. In Kenya news, the main opposition leader Raila Odinga is interested in becoming the next chairman of the African Union Commission is generating debate in the East African nation. It comes as local media reports say former Prime Minister Raila Odinga has reached out to former Nigerian President Olusegun Obasanjo to lobby African leaders on his behalf. Observers say to succeed, Odinga would need the support of his main rival, Kenyan President William Ruto. Mark Bichachi, communication and political strategy strategist of DIA Consult tells me that it looks likely that the president will back his main rival with Ruto's eye on his re-election bid.
It comes at a quite interesting time, remembering that this is just hardly a year and a half after he lost the 2022 elections. Having lost the 2022 elections, many Kenyans were wondering what is Raila Odinga's logical move. Therefore, his move to try and attain the chairmanship of the AU is being taken largely as an opportunity for him to retire out of Kenyan politics gracefully, because many have felt that he just does not have the steam anymore to run for the top political post in Kenya. So many are taking it as a situation where Raila has found an exit out of Kenya and is giving opportunity for the opposition politics in this country to evolve.
Does it appear that he's abandoning his long-held ambition, as some of his critics say, of becoming the president of the Republic of Kenya?
Well, many have implied so, simply because the chairmanship of the AU is considered a senior position. Therefore, many are looking at it as his graceful exit out of Kenyan politics, and also an opportunity for people like Kalonzo Musyoka to step up.
Mark, his candidacy will require the support of his rival, current President William Ruto. Do you see that happening? Because not having support of President Ruto could undermine his prospect of becoming the chairman of the African Union Commission.
Well, one of the things that I am hearing from the grapevine is that President William Ruto is more than willing, actually, to support Raila Odinga chairmanship of the AU, simply because it helps him solve two problems. Number one, there will be no more demonstrations. This is the biggest issue that he has in this country. Number two is the fact that the biggest challenge in his mind to his presidency being renewed is Raila Odinga in 2027. So he is more than willing, from what I'm hearing, to support Raila Odinga simply because it assures him of 3 years of peaceful leadership, as well as reduces the chances of him losing the presidency in 2027.
Has it been a major turn in the flesh of President Ruto to want to see him go away from Kenya's local politics?
Absolutely. Let's remember that Raila Odinga has had deals, for example, with Mwai Kibaki, and doing a deal with Mwai Kibaki allowed Kibaki to rule the government peacefully. The second is Uhuru Kenyatta. In 2018, he did a deal with Raila Odinga that allowed him to leave the country without demonstrations and without any other issues. So what William Ruto has done is to deflect the local politics where he would have seemed to have betrayed his voters, but at the same time be able to give Raila Odinga a position that gives him relative peace. So it is a devil's deal for sure. And from what I hear is that William Ruto will absolutely support Raila Odinga's run for AU chairmanship.
From what you are hearing on the ground, what do you think his prospects are of becoming the next chairman of the African Union Commission?
Well, for a fact, Raila Odinga has the relevant experience, and beyond that, the relative networks across Africa and beyond to garner support, one of the local presidents, because many view the AU chairmanship as a rotating chairmanship, and they're thinking that this is the time for East Africa to take over. So does he have influence and sway in Tanzania, in Uganda, and in Rwanda, and all of these other countries? Yes, he does. Does he have the necessary influence across the continent? Yes, he does. Is there any other candidate that has as big a stature as him? No.
Mark Bichachi is communication and political strategist of DIA Consult. He spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. 2024 will be a busy year for elections in Africa, with nearly 20 countries slated to hold presidential or general elections. But as VOA's Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo reports, the democratic process is not off to a good start, as two countries have already postponed elections and another has re-elected a former military ruler for the fourth time.
The small island nation of Comoros was the first African country to hold presidential elections in 2024. Incumbent President Azali Assoumani, a former military officer who first came to power in a coup in 1999, won a fourth term. Election results were immediately rejected by the opposition, triggering violent protests that killed one and injured 25. Next on the list was supposed to be Mali, followed by Senegal, but elections were postponed in both countries. Mali is ruled by a military junta that overthrew a democratically elected government in 2020. Edgar Githua of the United States International University Africa says that elections may not take place in Sahel countries that have recently experienced coups.
Burkina Faso, Mali, Niger have promised in a transition they will not transit. All these military juntas are trained military soldiers. They do not know how to govern. The learning curve for them to learn how to govern is too long.
Earlier this month, Senegalese President Macky Sall announced that elections will be delayed due to allegations of corruption in election-related cases and the disqualification of some leading candidates. Some in the opposition have called the delay a constitutional coup, though in July, Sall said he would not seek a third term after deadly clashes protesting his possible run for another term. But Lloyd Kuvea of the University of Pretoria Law School in South Africa told VOA it seems like Sall wants to stay a little longer.
Can we really trust Macky Sall? Especially after everybody knows that he had intentions for going for third term. And if it hadn't been for the protests of the people of Senegal, I am quite sure that he would have gone ahead to change the constitution.
On Thursday, Senegal's top election authority, the Constitutional Council, ruled that postponing the elections was unconstitutional. In East Africa, Rwanda has had the same president since 2000.
Rwanda is the paradox of Africa. Paradox of Africa because the Rwandese themselves are afraid to talk about their own election. If you have a vote where 98% of the population vote for one candidate, that is a red flag. Nobody is that popular in this world.
Githua says Paul Kagame will once again win the elections with over 90% of the vote in his favor. But he's more worried about the post-Kagame era.
Rwandese democracy is not mature because we've had some very negative experiences of past leaders who've tried to run against Kagame. The system kind of muzzles them.
In South Africa, the African National Congress has been governing since 1994, when Nelson Mandela was elected president following the end of apartheid in the early 1990s. But there may not be business as usual, Kuvea says.
The ANC will win the election, but not with an outright majority. It will be below 50, and therefore the African National Congress itself must brace for coalition politics, although they are saying there will never be a coalition. They are going to win outright.
He notes that allegations of corruption, scandals, and disunity within the ANC are already helping the opposition, including the Economic Freedom Fighters Party, led by Julius Malema, a former ANC youth leader. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
In Seychelles, main opposition leader Patrick Hemini says he's in talks with his lawyers to determine whether he should sue the government for what he calls malicious prosecution. This after prosecutors dropped all charges, including witchcraft, against him and four others. Prosecutors gave no reason for dropping the charges, but the opposition leader denies the charges, saying they are politically motivated. Hemini, a former Speaker of Parliament, says he plans to run for president in 2025. He tells me that it appears the prosecutors did not have evidence to convict him of the charges against him.
Well, I'm not surprised because right from the start I knew it was all malicious. The prosecution had no evidence whatsoever, and I knew that the prosecution itself was a malicious one, frivolous, vexatious, and it was politically motivated. I am not surprised that they dropped it, because I knew there was no way they could have convicted me. They had no evidence.
Well, Dr. Hemini, report says that you were charged with the possession of items intended for use in witchcraft, conspiracy to perform witchcraft, and procuring services related to witchcraft, according to local media report, as I said. So why do you think this is politically motivated when you were caught?
No. I was never caught with any item. 50 armed police officers searched my office, and they found absolutely nothing. So I was charged with soliciting witchcraft for whatever purpose. No, at no material time was any object found in my office. That's completely false. It's not true. They came and they saw nothing. There was absolutely nothing.
Are you going to compete in next year's general election as an opposition leader?
Yes, obviously. We will finalize everything on the 2nd of June. I will officially announce my candidature. Sure. I will contest.
What do you think your chances are?
Very high, because the people, they are very dissatisfied and very disappointed with the performance of this government. The people is poorer now than they were before, than they were 4 years ago. And there's a lot of frustration and dissatisfaction in the country right now. There is a general consensus that this president must go.
But what makes you so confident? Because remember, the power of incumbency is very strong, and he was elected before.
You see, Peter, we are now, as a political party, we are now pulling bigger crowds than the government in rallies and protestations. And we're doing door-to-door almost every week, and we know what the people, we have our fingers on the pulse of this nation. And we know very, very for sure that our support is increasing on a daily basis.
Analysts will tell you that the fact that you are pulling a lot of crowds does not necessarily translate into voting for you or for a candidate during elections.
I will have to go with the tradition here. The party which pulls the bigger crowd has always won the election. You see, so obviously it doesn't mean that it will translate into votes for my party, but we are confident. We are confident that we will succeed. We will form the next government in 2025. There is absolutely no doubt about that.
Well, so where do you go from here after the charges against you were dropped?
Well, I'm discussing with my lawyer whether we're going to sue the government for malicious prosecution. I think we've almost decided that yes, we should, but the caveat is that the country's economy right now is so bad. We've just had an explosion in an industrial estate, mainly due to the negligence of this government, that we feel it wouldn't probably be right to request money from the government. You see, because at the end of the day, it is the taxpayers who will be paying, and not President Ramkalawan or anybody else. So these are our considerations right now. Yes, we have a case. There's absolutely no doubt about it. But should we go ahead with it, given the prevailing economic situation in our country?
Patrick Hemini is main opposition leader from the United Seychelles Party. He spoke with me from the Seychelles capital, Victoria. Senegal's Constitutional Council on Thursday ruled that Parliament's unprecedented postponement of the February 25th presidential vote was not in line with the Constitution, pitching the country into a new phase of electoral uncertainty. Opposition presidential candidates and lawmakers last week filed several legal challenges to the bill that delayed the vote until December and extended President Macky Sall's mandate in what critics said amounted to an institutional coup. The standoff has fueled widespread unrest and raised international concern that one of the remaining democracies in coup-hit West Africa are under threat. Mimi Touré is a lawyer and a former prime minister who was disqualified from contesting in the coming presidential vote. She tells me that the Constitutional Court's ruling is a relief to her and many Senegalese.
Well, I mean, a feeling of satisfaction, obviously, because that's what I was expecting along with all Senegalese people, because the violation of the law and the constitution was so obvious, because how can you extend the term of a president when the constitution is saying very clearly that nobody can exercise more than two consecutive terms? So that was quite a simple case, but, you know, things are never simple these days when it comes to respecting law. So I was satisfied along with, you know, many Senegalese.
What does this mean? Does that mean that the February 25th election will proceed as constitutionally mandated or originally planned?
What the council has said is that the election has to occur before the end of President Macky Sall's term. So we have between the 25th of February to 2nd of April to organize it. It's usually a two-round election, so we are still within the time frame. And we expect President Macky Sall to respect the decision. The spokesman of the government said that they take note of the decision of the council, who asked the government to organize, you know, a free and fair election. So we are back in track. We are back in track, as we usually know. You know, Senegalese democracy is resilient. That's, you know, my take on the whole ordeal, because it's an ordeal. Unfortunately, there have been three young lives lost in demonstration, and this should never happen again.
You were disqualified, but for those who were also disqualified, where do they go from here? Does that mean that a new vetting process by the Constitutional Council will have to be undertaken? Where does this leave you?
Remember that the decision of the Constitutional Council are final. You cannot do any recourse against them. So they had a 20 candidate list, and that list will proceed to the election. I thought that the system has been so unjust to me and I was cheated, but yes, that's the law. And then now we have 20 candidates, and we will proceed with them.
So you are supporting one of your former rivals, correct?
Well, I mean, we've been in the opposition together for quite some time. We were together at the parliament. We took some joint initiatives. So we've been working together for quite some time now. So I'm supporting, indeed, one of the candidates of former PASTEF, which is one of the opposition party.
What are your expectations about how the elections will be organized following this ruling by the Constitutional Court in Senegal?
Well, President Macky Sall has a unique chance to leave the scene on a positive note by organizing free and fair election. The same that allowed him to run and win, that's exactly what we expect from him. The fight will be around the electoral file. This is a key battle that the opposition will have to fight. So we don't see what we have seen during the sponsorship control. For myself, for instance, I was told that 13,000 people of my sponsorship could not be found in the file, although I brought the evidence, of their presence in the 2022 electoral file. So that battle is key to have a free and fair election. And I think the opposition will really focus on it. We were ready to go, you know, to election with our representative in the election booth and electoral booth and so on. But the number one challenge now is to have the real file and make sure that all voters can vote on election day.
Mimi Touré is a lawyer and a former prime minister of Senegal. She spoke with me from the capital, Dakar. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, a secondary school dropout from rural Malawi has brought electricity to his community using what he says is a groundbreaking air-powered generator, bypassing use of fuel, oil or batteries. Experts have questions about how the system works, but Malawi's government is pledging support. For VOA, Lamek Masina reports from Doa District.
Inventor Ernest Andrews' innovation largely aims to save money villagers spend in buying torches and batteries to light their homes. He says they were facing a lot of problems without using electricity, and he thought of trying to make electricity, and now all is well. The 18-year-old secondary school dropout says his generator produced 1 volt of electricity. He has now connected 9 houses made transformer. This system generates electricity using air. To make a light bulb illuminate, he uses power stored in bottles. He experiments with magnetic power to determine how much electricity he can produce. After that, he generates power based on the number of houses he wants to supply. But experts complain of Andrew's failure to articulate how he is using air to generate electricity, or they say he might be purposely concealing it to prevent others from coping. Ali Katumba is an electrical engineer and a specialist in power generation in Blanta.
What type of air is he using? We don't know. What air is doing to produce the power? We don't know. And he is not safe. How is he taking the air into his system to produce electricity? We don't know. And he is not explaining. So how can we appreciate? How can we assist as engineers?
Katumba said if it proved real, Andrew's innovation would be rated among the most extraordinary in the world. The innovation has convinced skeptical neighbors. Mary Piri is among those benefiting from free electricity. She says she was among those who doubted his ability to generate electricity that they can use in their homes. But when she saw that he had managed to connect his parents' house, she asked him to connect her house too. Now, life is simple. The villagers use the free electricity to charge phones and plug in electric shaving machines. Andrew's mother, Evelyn Chinguo, says he dropped out of school in 2018 because of lack of school fees. She's appealing to well-wishers to assist Andrew with his education, like sending him back to school to improve his innovative ideas, because she says the knowledge he is using is inborn. Minister of Energy Ibrahim Matola recently expressed appreciation of the invention.
Such innovations can make us achieve access to electricity. But not only access, affordability, sustainability.
Authorities in Doa District donated training, electric wires, protective wear, and a gadget for measuring electricity voltage. Mese Mpakule is director for planning and development for the Doa District Council.
One thing that we're going to do as a district to make sure that he's, whatever he's doing when he's working on the appliances is safe.
The Malawi government has organized a group of experts and identify areas to assist. In the meantime, Andrew is working to connect the entire village and fulfill the government's request to illuminate the nearby public primary school. Lamek Masina, VOA News, Doa District, Malawi.
There were mixed reactions Friday in Zimbabwe after the vice president threatened a gay and lesbian group for offering university scholarships to underprivileged students. For VOA Colombo's Mavunga reports from Harare, where the vice president, who is serving as acting president while President Emmerson Mnangagwa is out of the country, said the LGBTQ community is, quote, alien, anti-life, un-African, and un-Christian.
In a statement Thursday night, Vice President Constantino Chiwenga condemned an LGBTQ advocacy group, the Gays and Lesbians of Zimbabwe, for offering the scholarships and urged young Zimbabweans to snub the offers. Chiwenga, who is acting president while President Emmerson Mnangagwa is in Dubai, said Gays and Lesbians of Zimbabwe is making an insidious attempt to advance foreign interest by enticing Zimbabwe's less privileged youths into LGBTQ communities' activities. He said the government sees such scholarship offers as a direct challenge on its authority and thus will not hesitate to take appropriate measures to enforce national laws and to protect and defend national values. There was no immediate word from President Mnangagwa on whether he agreed with his deputy's statement or whether it was authorized. While Zimbabwean officials did not respond to VOA's request for comment, citizens had strong reactions to the vice president's statement. One of them is 36-year-old Oliver Mutambara.
I would like to thank the acting president for the clear message that we are not going to accept those scholarships. We should remember that we are a multi-religious community. We have the Christian community, which shares the largest chunk. And from our principles, we do not condone such practices. So as the youths of this country, we are going to seek permission very soon from our government to act upon those people, who bring down their banners and will act accordingly to them.
Lloyd Damba is the spokesman for Zimbabwe's opposition party, the Movement for Democratic Change. He did not entirely disagree with the vice president's statement.
This is a Christian nation. The Christian community believes that men can only marry a woman. And based on that, I think he is correct in his sense. If there is anything that is happening as regards to the LGBTI, I think it is happening behind the scenes. But the way that these guys have taken a stance, it seems as if Zimbabwe is blessing such marriages and such unions. So as far as the vice president is concerned, he is basing on Christian values. And also, just besides Christian values, I think he is basing his community also that the laws of the land do not permit such things.
But the 28-year-old Treasure Basopo has a different view, arguing that the Gays and Lesbians of Zimbabwe has been a legal organization in the country since 1990. He took swipe at Chiwenga, a former army general, before he became a vice president in 2017 after the military coup that ousted former president Robert Mugabe.
He's a man of misplaced priorities and excitable character. General Chiwenga must first give reference to Section 78, which talks of persons of the same-sex marriage being banned from engaging to a marriage. But the Constitution is silent about the conduct and the activities of these people before marriage.
Basopo also said the government should also put greater energy toward improving the government's delivery of basic services and fighting corruption and theft. Speaking to VOA, Salim Nume, representative for rights group Equality Now in Southern Africa, called on the Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission and other such institutions, as well as Southern African Regional Body SADC, to ensure Harare protects the rights of everyone in the country.
The statement in tone is in contrary to Zimbabwe's commitment and obligations under international law to uphold the rights of all, including its LGBTQ plus citizens. The government must not only refrain from making discriminatory statements, but actively work towards creating an environment that respects and protects the diverse identities within the nation.
Chesterfield Samba, director of Gays and Lesbians of Zimbabwe, said Friday that his organization's body was still digesting Vice President's statement. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Harare.
Twelve multi-award-winning Ghanaian musicians, among them Stone Boy, Kwesi Arthur, and Black Sherif, are set to perform in Washington, D.C. on March 9th for the Rolling Cocoa Festival, a cultural event focused on celebrating and showcasing the West African nation's strong heritage. Music experts and Afrobeat fanatics applaud the festival for its move to promote African music and culture in the diaspora. For more on the event, my colleague Mike Ohove was joined in our Washington studios by Osita Oge, popularly known by his alias Duke. He is the founder of Duke Concept, the promotions company responsible for the Rolling Cocoa Festival.
I think that Ghanaian music is very authentic,
mm-hmm.
right? But I also feel like they've not been given or they've not created an avenue to showcase authentic Ghanaian music to the world. They still have unadulterated African music sound. Mm-hmm. So those who, let me explain. So those who are doing High Life are still doing High Life, music. It's mm-hmm. not hip-hop High Life, it's mm-hmm. High Life. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Those who are doing reggae, because remember also reggae connects to Africa yes. much more.
Yes.
From back in the days, mm-hmm. from very early days, Jamaica and
Bob Marley and them used to tour in Africa.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So the like of Stone Boys still sing, they speak mm-hmm. and sing in Patois, original mm-hmm. Patois. Mm-hmm. So knowing that, I've always wanted to build an opportunity to showcase the beauty of Ghanaian music.
Mm-hmm.
And my Ghanaian friends, those who are close to me, know that I always jokingly say, which I'm serious, that when I open a label, one of my first artists will be Ghanaian. I love Ghanaian music, and mind you, we've started trying to push this culture from a very long time, because we started in 2013 or 14.
Jeez.
We started the longest Ghanaian Independence Day party mm-hmm. called Akwaba NYC.
Okay.
So Akwaba is a party for Ghanaian Independence mm-hmm. in New York.
Mm-hmm.
It's the longest ever in America.
It's still running up until now.
It's still running, yes. We're doing it after Rolling Cocoa. So it's something that we've intentionally been trying and building, but, you know, sometimes the time has to come.
Mm-hmm.
And that time is now.
Okay.
Because guess what? Duke Concept is where it is now. We mm-hmm. have the power to make anything happen by God's
right.
grace.
Right.
You know, we have the capacity. You mm-hmm. know, we have the skill set.
Mm-hmm.
And Ghanaian music has also grown mm-hmm. a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so bringing the likes of Altubes, who have always made good music from back in the days, right? So bringing the old and the Blacko,
mm-hmm.
like in I don't want to use the new cat, but Blacko, who is new on the scene,
mm-hmm.
and merging them, then the legends Stone Boy, then you mm-hmm. talk of Kiddy, who mm-hmm. has a song with over 90 million streams, then you talk of the songstress mm-hmm. Effia,
mm-hmm.
you know, bringing all that. Then remember that Ghana also. Dance is part of the music, part right. of the culture.
Mm-hmm.
So incredible Jiggy, mm-hmm. You know, it's important to have him in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an intentional work, and if you look at it, and that's why when you look at it, you see the selection was purposefully done
okay.
to represent the culture and the music from Ghana.
I've always had a theory of Ghana and Nigerian music, both beautiful. The difference is Nigeria has always had the numbers and the buying power.
Correct.
How important is it to now expose more Ghanaian artists to that buying power?
So that's what we're trying to do. So I always say that Nigeria has good music, right? But mm-hmm. what sells Nigeria is not just the music, it's the business, right? The Ghanaian music industry needs to do more in understanding the music business. But Ghana is still a growing country when it comes to music.
Mm-hmm.
They have the talent, but the business of music, the music business, is still, there's still a lot of learning to do. But it will get there. So opportunities like this puts them on the world stage for those conversations to start happening.
Duke is the founder of Duke Concept. He spoke with my colleague Mike Hove at our studios here in Washington. And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
Big stars, big cash, my way, but still I can't believe. Under 1 minute, still I can't believe. But I can't blame myself for this. New man just was born for this. Of course I fucked up. Who never fucked up hands in the air? No hands. Still I can't believe. You know what I mean? I was young, what you expect from me? It is what it is. But I keep going, no. More like a rolling stone, cause I have no stopping time. Can nobody stop a man? Oh, I keep going, no. More like a rolling stone, cause I have no stopping time. Can nobody stop a man? No, I'm gonna run my race. I'm gonna keep my pace. Cause I really have no one to play when I fall again. I can't stand this pain. I can't watch me fail. So anytime you pray, remember my name. Remember you know a traveler. The name is Peku the Hustler. He's been far away chasing Gualala. I'll be back again, promise coming. I swear on my life, I can't wait to be back. I know you miss me, I know. Remember you know a traveler. The name is Peku the Hustler. He's been far away chasing Gualala. I'll be back again, promise coming. I swear on my life, I can't wait to be back. I know you miss me, I know. When it's on and it's on, you can't stop till it's done. See, goddamn, I'm a buck. I'm proud to see I'm a sister. It's a great man, oh. Ain't going on, I met you. It's a great man, oh. It's a great man, oh. When it's on and it's on, I can't stop till it's done. See, goddamn, I'm a buck. I'm proud to see I'm a sister. It's a great man, oh. Ain't going on, I met you. It's a great man, oh. It's a great man, oh. Yeah. See me on the roads, my friend. Talking to you, boys. Ah, 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 ah. Remember, you know a traveler. The name is Greg Wood, the Hustler. He's been far away, chasing Walala. I'll be back again, promise coming. I swear on my life. I can't wait to be back. I know you miss me, I know. Remember, you know a traveler. The Hustler, he's been far away chasing Gualala. I'll be back again, bro, me coming. I swear on my life, I can't wait to be back. I know you miss me, I know.
Boomba. Kim, mommy, so sugar cane sweet, but your love is sweeter. Double of juice mixed with a little ginger. Oh girl, I wanna be with you, but you know they got enough time from me. I wanna live with you. I got the reason why I can't let go. Girl, you never know, so you come pass up. Man, them so far to find your love. Girl, you never know, so you come pass up. Man, them so far to find your love. Girl, you never know, so you come pass up. Man, them so far to find your love. Girl, you never know, so you come pass up. So far to find your love. Match on your king, now a girl don't talk. Coming like a thief in a night long jaw. But you know, say, all of my niggas them ball. Nothing you go ever, ever need at all. Match on your king, now a girl don't know. Taking it a break, at me, I know the rush. Baby, if you want me, catch a rabble, mommy, say, we don't me.
Show me a jigger, let me see.
Let me see.
And let me see the woman that is with.
That is it.
Put a couple $1,000 on your wrist.
What's on your wrist?
Mama, right mama, they can't touch you. I never see this kind, babe. We do some kind things, make me feel some kind way. You know, I'm not just trying to get laid. Cause I know some kind things, do it for the right pay. Baby, make a fire, you with my machine guns. 16 rounds, I be King Kong. Kelly, make a sample, you my brand new song.
your body a thing or two. If you know the things we do, this love ain't no be jump nowhere before. Yeah, yeah, girl, so mama, you mean second. Five star boomba, not a bad. Kaba, kaba, me a kata, me in a mope. Oh my, I need my elbows, my mama. All of my guys are thugs, but you know I'm rude though. Me, if you wanna give it up, I'll drop boombas for your love. All of the guys, they want you, they don't know that I got you. And they never been what we been for. That's your my obsession. When I put you in a ride, skirt, skirt, skirt. Shawty, come and ride in my backseat. Would you tell me what you want, what you fancy?
From the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. From the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Douglas Impuga and engineer the great Al Santos, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, a cat that dreams of becoming a lion must begin with losing appetite for rats. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa. The mission is hard for the taking.